fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Wonderful Wednesday to you. Welcome to the show on this Wednesday before Thanksgiving 2021. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. It's a great time to call in if you're traveling, if you're in the car. Don't talk and drive at the same time unless your hand's free. 1-888-914-9149. Once again, that toll-free line, 888-914-9149. You can also tweet at me. You can follow me on Twitter, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. We have a show account as well, at Cale Clark Show. And the email address is Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And if you were looking at my Twitter feed, you probably saw something that I posted last night. I was made aware of a great tragedy within the Relevant Radio family. We learned that Tamara Durand, the wife of Relevant Radio host Dave Durand, who is still a frequent contributor, had a show called The Dave Durand Show, and you can still listen to those episodes. A wonderful host on relevantradio.com and through the app, and still a frequent contributor to our Relevant Radio programming as a guest. His wife, Tamara, was one of those who lost their lives in the tragic events that unfolded this past Sunday at the Christmas parade, the Milwaukee Christmas parade that took place in Waukesha, Wisconsin. And we are all heartbroken for David and his family. This Thanksgiving is going to be just, I mean, you can't put it into words. She was only 52 years old, Tamara. And I would just ask you to pray for David and his family and for all of those who lost loved ones. And the latest victim is an 8-year-old boy who passed away from his injuries just recently, just over the last 24 hours, bringing the total victims to 6. And so this Thanksgiving is going to be just a very, very, again, I'm at a loss here, but just please pray and ask God to uphold them. Dave Durand, his family, the families of all of the victims, pray for the repose of their souls. And please hug your loved ones tight this Thanksgiving when you meet with them, if you're on your way home. And everyone has to face suffering in life, and sometimes some of us have to face horrific tragedies like this one. And being Catholic it doesn't always take away the pain, but we have a God who has suffered himself. Jesus was intimately acquainted with suffering. His mother watched her son die at the foot of the cross. And so we don't have a God who does not understand or has not experienced, entered into that suffering. And that can give us some comfort and some hope in dark days like this. And today's feast day really speaks to this as well. Today is the feast of the Vietnamese martyrs, and a lot of Catholics aren't aware of their inspiring story. And this happened in the 17th century. And there's a great piece over at Notre Dame, the University of Notre Dame, about the Vietnamese martyrs. And since a lot of you probably haven't heard too much about them, I thought I'd share their story with you, because they in turn inspired a modern-day St. Paul from the 20th century, Cardinal Von Thuan, during his ordeal of being persecuted for the faith. But today the church celebrates 117 martyrs who died for their faith in Vietnam since the 17th century. And they're basically representatives of many, many more, hundreds of thousands who suffered and were killed for their faith in Jesus Christ in that country. And so this group that was officially canonized included 96 people from Vietnam, 21 missionaries who came from Spain and France, 8 of the martyrs were bishops, 50 were priests, and 60, a slight majority, were lay people. And so very often they're known as St. Andrew Dung Lac and companions. And St. Andrew Dung Lac is the most famous of the Vietnamese martyrs. He was born in 1795 in North Vietnam, and when he was 12 years old, he moved to Hanoi with his family, and his parents were looking for work, and there was a Catholic catechist there, a layperson who offered him food, shelter, helped him become an educated person, and led him to Christ in the Catholic faith. And so St. Andrew Dung was baptized, and he picked the name Andrew as his baptismal name. And really, when you think about Andrew in the Gospel of John, Andrew was the one who went to find his brother Simon, who became Peter, who became the first pope. An evangelistic enterprise is often called Operation Andrew. He met Jesus, did Andrew, and then he went to find his brother. And so Andrew Dunlack wanted to be like St. Andrew. He wanted to bring other people to Jesus. And so he started to catechize others too. And eventually he was picked to study for the priesthood. Andrew Dunlack was ordained in 1823 and was known as a very holy priest, just a model of the Catholic life, a very effective preacher. And eventually the emperor began to persecute the church. Andrew went to prison for his Catholic faith many times, but his congregation would ransom him. They would raise money and purchase his freedom. But eventually, he was imprisoned one final time. He was brutally tortured and finally was beheaded along with some other companions. And it was actually the Dominican and Jesuit missionaries who were the first to be martyred in Vietnam. They actually brought the faith to that country in the 17th century. And that's really those seeds, along with the blood of the martyrs, that really made the church grow. But even though the church has continued to gain members in Vietnam, the church has always suffered, even to this day, under political regimes there of communism. And in fact, I have a family member who was working in Vietnam a couple of years ago, and he told me of a Catholic parish and village that was basically confiscated and razed to the ground by authorities. The land was taken away from them, and the government decided to, I don't know what they built there instead, but this is a terrible situation for local Catholics. And this has often been the case in Vietnam. And a lot of Catholics renounced their faith, unfortunately, during religious persecutions of Vietnam. And they were asked to trample upon crucifixes to prove their ultimate allegiance to the state. And the authorities would give financial rewards to people who turned in their fellow Catholics. And, wow, talk about a bargain worthy of Judas. And at any rate, the church would often pay corrupt officials to gain the freedom of the Catholics who were imprisoned for their faith. And a large amount of missionary efforts and fundraising actually went into freeing Vietnamese prisoners during the last couple of hundred years. So St. Andrew Dung Lac was tortured, was beheaded, was killed. And in 1862, eventually there was a treaty that was made with the French that did grant religious freedom to Catholics in that country, but it didn't stop all the persecution. And over 600,000 Christians fled the country in the last century, left everything behind because of religious persecution. So we need to ask the Vietnamese martyrs to pray for us. And again, one of the people who was really inspired by these martyrs was the late Cardinal Francis Xavier Van Tuan. And he was made a cardinal in 2001, just a year before his death in 2002 by St. John Paul II. And his story is incredibly inspiring. He really was a modern-day St. Paul. And Bob French wrote a really nice piece about him several years ago for The Word Among Us. And he started it off by talking about the moment that at the time he was a bishop. Bishop Francis Xavier Van Tuan was arrested. His interrogator, his communist interrogator, when he was arrested, said, "You're part of a Vatican plot. You're an imperialist lackey." And by the way, he was the Archbishop of Saigon, Francis Xavier Van Tuan. He said, "I'm not. I'm not part of any plot. There's no intrigue going on here. I'm just trying to serve my people in the name of Christ." But he was placed under arrest, and it was August the 15th, the Feast of the Assumption, in 1975. And Bishop Van Tuan, for the next 13 years, languished in prison. He suffered terribly in body, mind, and soul. But God did not waste that suffering. In fact, God used it to transform him into really an apostle of hope. And the witness of his life, if you've never heard of him, is very powerful. And he really did provide a great counter witness to atheism, materialism, communism in his life. And that's obviously a plague that still is impacting the globe, as we know, to this day. So he grew up, Colonel Von Thuan grew up in the 1930s, and all of his family members were devout Catholics, and they were persecuted for their faith growing up, but they were able to hang on to it. And actually, many of the men in his family were big leaders in the community, and eventually his uncle, Diem, became the country's first prime minister. Francis Von Thuan decided to serve other people by becoming a priest, though. He didn't want to enter into politics. And he went into the seminary when he was only 13, went into a minor seminary in Vietnam. And he used to read the lives of the saints, like St. Therese of Lisieux, St. John Vianney, St. Francis Xavier, who was his namesake. And it just fueled in him this desire for holiness. And by the way, Cardinal Von Thuan's cause for canonization is currently open. I believe he has been given the title of Venerable at this point. In 1945, when he was still in the seminary, the communist government executed his uncle Coy and his uncle's son. And right after he was ordained in 1953 as a priest, Colonel Von Thuan actually almost died himself. He contracted tuberculosis. His parents prayed for him, and he seemed to receive a miraculous cure. 10 years after that, in 1963, the communists took Vietnam from the French, and Von Thuan suffered another devastating blow. His maternal uncle, Diem, who had been the country's first prime minister, and another uncle named Khan were both assassinated by the Viet Cong. And he had a really hard time forgiving those who had killed his uncles. And what helped him was his mother's example. His mother was able to do this, and the fact that she was able to forgive the killers of these family members gave Von Thuan the strength to also accept this tragedy. And she had told him, actually, before his uncle, Diem, who had been the prime minister, was assassinated, Von Thuan's mother told him, "Everything is in God's hands. We need to pray for his safety, but we also need to be ready to accept God's will, whatever that may be." And so she was always filled with peace, and that really helped him. And her example was really inspiring to him during his subsequent years in prison. In 1957, Colonel Von Thuan, long before he became a cardinal, he took a trip to Lourdes, and he was really struck by visiting Lourdes and learning about Saint Bernadette. And one of the things about Bernadette's life that really impacted him was one of the things that she said. She said, "I do not promise you joys and consolations on this earth, but rather trials and sufferings." Actually, those are the words of Mary, of Our Lady, to Saint Bernadette. "I don't promise you joys and consolations on earth, but trials and sufferings." The joys and consolations she would receive would be in heaven. And Father Von Thuan realized that in some way these words were meant for him too. And so he prayed that in the future he would be able to accept whatever trials and sufferings the Lord sent his way. And so that was kind of the attitude, the posture he had when the communists threw him into prison in 1975 on the Feast of the Assumption. And he was really most upset by not being able to serve his people as a bishop. But he continued to do what he could. And again, he was kind of like St. Paul in a way. Just as St. Paul wrote many letters from prison and tried to even evangelize his jailers, that's exactly what Von Thuan did. He said, "I'm not going to wait. I'm going to live each present moment, filling it to the brim with love." And so he tried to shepherd his people as best he could. And he actually wrote a lot of inspirational messages on any kind of scrap paper that he could find in the prison, the backs of pages of the calendar, anything. And these messages were eventually smuggled out, and they became a book, which is called The Road of Hope. Anyways, eventually his captors kind of caught on to what he was doing, and they really dropped the hammer on him. They put him in solitary confinement. His cell was very narrow, had very little light, no windows, and the air was so poor that sometimes he actually had to put his nose to the bottom of the prison cell door in order to take a few breaths of somewhat clean air. But after a few months of the solitary confinement, Bishop Von Thuan was kind of at his breaking point. He had trouble thinking, he had trouble even concentrating. He couldn't remember the words to the Hail Mary. But one day in solitary confinement, God gave him an insight that just transformed the way he was thinking about his ordeal. He felt so useless, and he just was really in despair. But a thought struck him that when Jesus was hanging on the cross, he too appeared utterly useless. And that was the moment when he was achieving the most good, the most useful thing that he ever could have done by saving the world, by providing for the salvation for all who would turn to him. And so Bishop Antoine kind of heard in his spirit a kind of an interlocution, God saying to him, Jesus saying to him, it is me that you are supposed to be following, not my work. I've entrusted certain work to you, but you will finish the work if I will it. If I will it, you will finish the work I entrusted to you. But again, it's me you're supposed to be following, not the work. And this realization brought him a lot of strength, and it completely changed the way he was thinking about his ordeal. When Jesus appeared the most useless, that's when he was really the most useful. And so he tried to look at his imprisonment that way. He tried to bring as much hope as he could to this hopeless situation. So he's eventually taken out of solitary confinement. He was put on a ship to North Vietnam with other prisoners. And actually, there was a guy on the boat who tried to commit suicide. He was able to stop him and talk him out of it. He was taken eventually to a prison camp in the North Vietnamese mountains. And some of his friends smuggled into him some wine, which they said was medicine for his stomach problem, and also some hosts, which they had stuck into a flashlight. And so he would actually celebrate Mass. He would take some water and mix it with the wine in the palm of his hands and consecrate it and celebrate Mass. And he said those were some of the most prolific Masses he ever celebrated, some of the most deep moments with the Lord that he ever had. And he was able to become incredibly popular with the other prisoners. He would evangelize them. He would evangelize the guards. He was so successful that they moved him to another prison, and they asked his cellmate to spy on him for the government. And eventually even that guy became his friend and offered to pray for him, which is very strange from his communist background, being as he was. At any rate, eventually he was moved, Bishop Antoine was moved to the village of Jiangxia, and the villagers were won over by his kindness. And all of the communists had a network of spies in that village that came crashing down. It was all ruined because they all came over to Antoine and his Catholic witness of love. And so, actually, right before he left that place, he was celebrating Mass for villagers, and two of the worst, the most diehard communist informers asked him if they could go to confession. I guess they'd come from a Catholic background, and they had repented. So, well, they said, this isn't working. He's just evangelizing everybody. So they put him back in solitary confinement again. They kept rotating the guards so they wouldn't catch his Catholic confession. And they were not allowed to talk to him, but he would talk to them and tell them about his life. And eventually they asked him to teach them foreign languages and even some spiritual songs. And one of the guards actually learned the hymn to the Holy Spirit, the Veni Creator Spiritus. And he started singing it every morning. At any rate, in 1985, the Vietnamese martyrs were beatified, who I told you about before. And when this happened, it didn't look like Cardinal Van Tuan was ever going to get out of prison. He was actually told by the communists he would never be released after the Vatican made this move. It created just too much tension for the communist regime. But he was absolutely overjoyed when Pope John Paul II beatified those Vietnamese martyrs, who really inspired him and his ordeal. And that was back in June 1988. But eventually, a few months later, just a few months after this, he heard a telephone ringing in the prison, and he had a feeling, Van Tuan had a feeling that whoever was on the other line, this call was about him. And so he started praying to Our Lady. He said, Mother, if I'm going to continue to be of use to our Lord and to the church in this prison, give me the grace and the honor to die here. But if you think that I can serve the church better, in a greater way, then please grant me the grace to be freed. So he's really just very docile to God's will, whatever that might be. Well, he was eventually taken away to the minister of police that morning, and he was told that, yep, that phone call was about him. And the communist government was no longer hostile towards his family, and the official asked him if he had any special wish. And Van Tuan said, I would like to be freed. And the official said, well, when do you want to be freed? And he said, today, like right now. And so he was released that very day. It was November the 21st, 1988, the Feast of the Presentation of Mary. In his book called The Road of Hope, most of which he wrote in prison, he wrote, God uses trials and sufferings to teach us to better understand and to be more patient with the sufferings of others. And he, for the rest of his life, he told other people about his ordeal and how God sustained him through it. And it touched thousands, if not millions, of lives. And Pope John Paul II personally valued his friendship. He actually appointed him to the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace. And he named him a cardinal in 2001. Unfortunately, at that time, Cardinal Van Tuan had been diagnosed with cancer. And after 2 years of suffering, he died on September the 16th, 2002. So he was really an apostle of hope. And I just want to close with this prayer that he composed in the gloom of solitary confinement that each of us can use whenever we're suffering as we put our faith in Christ. He wrote, I sing of your mercy in the darkness, in my weakness, in my annihilation. I accept my cross and I plant it with my own two hands in my heart. If you were to permit me to choose, I would change nothing. Because you are with me, I am no longer afraid. I have understood. I am following you in your passion and in your resurrection. And so that's just a beautiful prayer. So the cause for his canonization for Cardinal Van Tuan was opened on September the 16th, 2007. And so he's on the road for beatification. So I ask him to pray for you if you're suffering. And please pray again for the victims of the great tragedy, including the Duran family that happened last Sunday. May they be sustained by the prayers of the body of Christ. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We'll be right back. 888-914-9149.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back to the program. It is the Wednesday, the eve of Thanksgiving. 888-914-9149. Give me a call if you're on the road, if you're traveling. You can talk to me. I'll keep you company. And hopefully I'm keeping you company on Relevant Radio if you're listening on the app or on the radio itself. Glad to be with you. Glad to be with you. Well, there is a pretty viral clip that is all over the place on social media, and a friend of mine sent it to me, Greg Manette, and this is just wild. An atheist by the name of Hemant Mehta, who calls himself the Friendly Atheist, that's his website, has posted a video of an end times preacher, named Sharon Gilbert. Now, perhaps you've seen this. If you haven't, you will hear this in just a moment. You'll hear a clip from this. She was on the Jim Baker Show. Do you remember Jim Baker, the disgraced televangelist? He's making a comeback. And she said some very interesting things happened to her. Let's hear what the end times preacher Sharon Gilbert says. Check this out.
After Derek and I got married, one night, this other Derek appears in our bed. The real Derek is lying down next to me. Other Derek sits right up out of him. It startled me. I knew that was not Derek. And so I asked this critter, who are you? And he said, come on, I'm your husband. I said, who are you? And he had the nerve to claim to be Ahasuerus. Xerxes. Well, other Derek seriously wanted to invite me to use my free will to do something that was going to pull me away from God. So this last time, I knew he was really desperate. And I asked him again, who are you? He told me the same answer. And I said, I am not going with you. This was an internal dialogue. Finally, I said, I've had enough. In my mind, I reached up. I grabbed his face. And I said, you are a liar. And Jesus is real. And I pulled that face off. and beneath it was a reptile. And he had little creatures with him this time. He brought these little halfling creatures, and they looked like, I don't know, gargoyles. They were very reptilian as well. So beneath that face of Derek was a reptilian serpentine creature, probably similar to what was visiting the Anasazi.
Sounds reasonable. Waiter, whatever she's having, I'll take two of them. I'll need them this weekend. I'm not sure about the authenticity of this claim by the end times preacher Sharon Gilbert. Yes, an alien imitated her husband. And by the way, on the show, the real Derek was sitting right next to her, and he was kind of going, yep. He did raise his eyebrow at one point, so maybe he's not even sure about this. So this alien imitated her husband, was interested in knowing her in the biblical sense. I'm not going to elaborate on that. And it turns out it's King Xerxes of Persia. Maybe not, because she ripped his face off and turned out to be a reptile with a posse of gargoyles. Well, this is pretty wild. If you're a Catholic convert out there, I want to ask you this question. What is the craziest teaching you ever heard before you became Catholic? Whatever your religious background might have been, what's the craziest? Because this is probably the craziest thing I've ever heard. Anybody claiming to be a Christian, this is the craziest claim I've ever heard anybody make. And of course, people are having a field day with this on Twitter. Everybody's weighing in. This thing has thousands of retweets and quotes and people talking about it. And atheists are having a field day, as you might imagine. This isn't exactly a motive of credibility for Christianity. People saying stuff like this. But I should also tell you that for only $150, you can get the 13 DVD set of The Great Delusion from the Jim Baker program. That was kind of flashing at the bottom of the screen as she was speaking. Anyways, I'm really happy to be Catholic. I'm really happy to be in a church that has a magisterium, that has an official teaching office, because, we don't tend to get many reptilian teachings like this. I just thought this was just wild. I had to share this with you. Anyways, you're listening to the Cale Clark Show, 888-914-9149. We've got a couple of phone lines open. If you want to call in, it's a good time to call in. If you have a question, you want to ask me about something, go for it. 888-914-9149. You can also tag me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And you can also email the program. If you've got ideas for future show topics, we love to hear from our listeners. Please send me an email, cale@relevantradio.com. Man, there's so much great stuff that we could talk about. And I'm a big devotee, as you know, of Cal Newport, the writings of Cal Newport. And he's a professor. He teaches at Georgetown University. He's also a pretty great author. He's well known for not being on social media at all. You will not catch this guy on Twitter. In fact, he's got a TED Talk that's called Quit Social Media. I think you should give that a watch, maybe over the Thanksgiving break. It's an interesting take, and it's pretty short. It's not that long. I think it's only about 15 minutes long. And so he's an advocate of not being on social media at all. He doesn't have any social media accounts. And he actually knew some of the guys back in school who were kind of involved with the foundation of Facebook. And he remembers when Facebook first came to his campus, because remember, they rolled it out to universities. If you've seen the movie The Social Network, which I thought was a really good film, it talks about the early days of Facebook, and eventually, it started rolling out to university campuses before it kind of got to the wider world. And on his blog, Cal Newport writes about concepts like deep work. He's got a book called Deep Work, Digital Minimalism. I mean, he's got a website. He's not saying get off the internet completely, but he doesn't think social media is worth the deleterious effects. Hey, you might see reptilian videos like we just played for you. And he got an email from a Protestant minister named Amy. Now, of course, women's ordination is not a possibility. Those who are not Catholic, they think it is. We don't agree with that. Having said that, I don't want to make it about that, but I thought there was some interesting stuff in her email that she sent to Cal Newport, because she was really struggling with her schedule and how frazzled she was. And I think this is a good thing to talk about as we go into the Thanksgiving break. It might be a good chance for us to kind of reflect, because there is a spiritual point to this. And really, what she writes is applicable to a lot of people out there, a lot of you out there, no matter what profession you might be in. So she writes to Cal Newport, and she said, "A few years ago, I realized I was on the verge of burnout with my job." So she took a lot of steps to try to compensate for this, to try to deal with this. I give her credit. She realized she was going to burn out, and she started to take some steps. So the first thing she did was quit social media. The second thing she did was she took off of her phone any app that was, quote, refreshable by design, end of quote. So something that's going to continually hit you up with notifications and sound effects and break your concentration, break your flow, whatever you're doing. So she took off her phone any app that was refreshable by design. And so she started implementing something that Newport advocates. It's a fixed schedule productivity kind of setup. And basically what that entails is she set up her work hours in advance. And then she just said, you know, I'm not going to overwork. I'm not going to give into this. And so she, whatever her work time was, and Newport advocates this concept called time blocking, where you just kind of take the hours of the day, you write it all down. And so you block off your time. Like, what are you going to do each hour? And some people break it down to half hours, whatever the case may be. But Newport has always been, hey, when it's, he only works, despite the fact that he's writing a lot, he's teaching a lot, doing a lot of research on his academic job. He's got a pretty full life, got a family life. He only works 9 to 5. He shuts it down at 5 o'clock every day. Now, depending on what kind of work you do, you can't always do that. But he's a big advocate of what he calls fixed schedule productivity, setting your work hours in advance and figuring out, okay, you got it. Whatever you've got to do, you've got to make it fit within the time that you have. And not give in to living this imbalanced life. I know that it's easier said than done, but this is something I personally struggle with, because the nature of what I do, hosting on Relevant Radio, I mean, you could literally be working on this stuff 24/7, and sometimes I feel like, yeah, you know, there's no end. I mean, you can keep working on stories. There's always something else to consider. Maybe we could put this on the show, doing research and writing. And you gotta be able to have time for God, for family, for friends, for exercise, which I'm not doing a great job of. And I'm thankful it's not Thanksgiving in Canada, so I'm not tempted to eat the Reese's Thanksgiving pie, which is a gigantic peanut butter cup. We talked about that yesterday. So I got to dial it back. Tomorrow's just called Thursday, just a regular Thursday in Canada. But guess what? Actually, truthfully, I am celebrating Thanksgiving as well, because I double dip. Ours is in October. And don't worry, Christmas is at the same time. But yeah, I'm gonna be double dipping. I'm gonna be celebrating a little bit. Anyway, so there's this thing called Parkinson's Law, and we've talked about this before on the program too. That a researcher by that last name, Parkinson, discovered some years ago that this is actually during the war effort, World War II, that your work expands to fill however many hours you give to it. It's just the way it goes. Like, it just has a way of expanding on its own. You're never quite done. So you have to manually shut it down at some point and make your work fit within this constraint. Otherwise, you're in danger of possibly burning out. So that's what this gal Amy did. She told this to Cal Newport. She also began to take an actual Sabbath and taking that seriously. Obviously, it's a biblical command. And there's a number of books out there about this. There's more than one book by this title, 24/6. And there's one author who's written a book by this title is Tiffany Schlain. And the book is called S-H-L-A-I-N, by the way, Tiffany Schlain. So you can look that book up if you're interested. It's called 24/6, The Power of Unplugging One Day a Week. There are a number of benefits. Which is, it makes sense, right? God is pretty smart. He knows how we work. He created us. There are a lot of social, physical, spiritual, a lot of reasons that we need to take a rest. But we are often resisting a rest. Get it? Resisting a rest? Yeah. I stole that pun from Scott Hahn. Shamelessly so. Shamelessly. We need to have a Sabbath. We need to have a Sabbath. Here's another thing that she did. She forwarded all her work calls to voicemail. So she didn't, I think the reason why she did that was she didn't want to be reactionary to things. And by the way, when's the last time somebody actually picked up when you called them? That's one of the things that happens in this age of voicemail, smartphones. You can't get anybody on the phone. It's always voicemail. It's always voicemail. And so, you know, that's par for the course, I guess. But another thing that she did was she put in a personal rule that she said she must wait 24 hours before replying to any message that either made her really upset or really elated. I thought that was kind of fascinating. That if some message, somebody's left you a message or whatever that makes you really, really angry or upset, really gets your goat, wait at least 24 hours before responding. And actually, that's a good rule. A lot of saints have advocated that rule. Saint Jose Maria Escrivá actually talked about that a lot in his writings. He said, if you're angry about something, before talking to that person about it, wait a day or possibly even more, because that way you can kind of pray about it. Your response is going to be more purified. It won't be coming from, hopefully, a place of visceral anger, but you'll be able to rectify your intention. Hey, you won't, if you offend somebody by your words or actions, if you talk to them when you're angry, you're probably going to have to apologize later. So you can kind of avoid that in the first place by just waiting. And hopefully you won't needlessly offend the other person. And also you won't offend God, most importantly. So, but I thought it was interesting. So she decided to wait 24 hours before replying to any message that made her upset or even a message that made her elated, a message that made her happy. That's kind of interesting too, this whole idea of avoiding the extremes. And she began to schedule less work for herself. And so she decided to, this is kind of, now again, depending on your profession, you may not be able to do this, but she actually only scheduled rigorously 2/3 of the available work hours that she had. She left some flex time. Why did she do that? Because emergencies happen. Emergencies come up. And also that gave her some margin, because things don't, they never go quite the way you think they're going to go. Your day is always busted. Your schedule is always busted by something that comes up or some inconvenience or traffic or whatever. So it's good to have a little bit of margin so you're not quite as stressed. And the interesting thing is she thought she implemented all the stuff. She thought people were going to complain. And she was kind of shocked because nobody complained. Nobody got upset. And some people did get upset, but when they got mad at her, she was actually able to deal with it because she was more rested. She was coming from a better place. She actually has kind of a life outside of work. And here's one thing she said to Cal Newport. And this is kind of the conclusion of all her efforts. Time management is a core spiritual practice, end of quote. I thought that was kind of the money quote. Time management is a core spiritual practice. We don't often think about that. But This is spiritual. All of life is spiritual. Everything we do, and this is something that St. Paul talks about in his letter to the Romans, when he says, you know, we offer our bodies as a living sacrifice. And that involves everything we do. This is the theology of the body. We worship God in and through the body. We're not angels. You can say that again. We're not disembodied beings. We're body-soul unities, and this is how we serve God. It is through the body. And so that's part of it. And really, God entrusts us with certain things. This is part of our stewardship, right? And my friend Cardinal Collins is so big on this, and I've talked about this before on the program. Time, talent, and treasure. We want to hear these words at the end of our journey when we stand before the Lord. Well done, good and faithful servant. Well, what are we entrusted with? Our time? We don't know how much of it we've been given. We're making withdrawals every day from this little piggy bank called time, and we don't know when the last coin is going to come out. Time, talent, and treasure. And so this is really management of time. It is spiritual. It's part of our stewardship. And I think that's something we can really think about. So maybe when we come back from Thanksgiving break, we can have maybe a slightly different attitude on this and think about how we structure our day in spiritual terms and make sure that we do put limits on it. And you know, work is great. It's a gift from God. God wants us to work. Birds were created to fly. We were created to work. But we also have to pray. And God created us to be in relation with other people. So we've got to do that too. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk, by the way. That's my little TED Talk. And just some stray thoughts on that. So give me a call. What do you think about that? If you want to react to any of the stuff that we were talking about before, 888-914-9149. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We will be right back after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. Well, John Mayer, Last Train Home. Some of you are on the last train home. Hang with friends and family this Thanksgiving. What's your favorite Thanksgiving tradition? Let me know. 888-914-9149. That is the toll-free line to call in on the Cale Clark Show. 888-914-9149. And Patrick Alog, who's sitting in for Lucas Holt today. Patrick, what is your favorite Thanksgiving tradition in your family?
I think it's just getting together. I know that's cliche and stuff, but you know, just getting together, having food, having leftovers, the naps, you know, afterwards, the tryptophan effect. Watching sports. There was actually a couple of times in my life where I actually worked Thanksgiving.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I worked at a basketball tournament in Southern California, but I would always go home during the night, though. Other people would stay during the whole tournament, especially Thanksgiving Day, and they would, you know, get money and stuff. But I'm like, nope, I still want to go with my family. So, yeah.
Okay.
I know it's cliche. It's cliche.
Well, but, no, hey, listen, hey, whatever floats your boat. And
I am the type who's gone through three Thanksgivings in one day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Man. So that's what you do when your family's 3,000 miles away. You get invites and they all matched up perfectly. They're all in the same area. I'm like, yep, 11 a.m., 1 p.m., 3 p.m. or whatever it was that day, that Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, Maggie Greschel, who's working the phones for us today, she tells us that she likes to play card games, watch movies. She and her family like to sit around and watch movies in their sweatpants. That's kind of fun. And you mentioned, Patrick, you like to watch sports. Will you be watching the NFL tripleheader tomorrow?
I might. Well, definitely the first game might be. I'll probably more glance it more. Because I'm going to go to a friend's place and he'll have the game on and stuff like that. I'm not going to like sit down and just watch it just by myself or even with others, you know. So, but I am going to glance the games just to see what's going on.
We should probably handicap these games for our listening audience. Don't take these to Vegas by any stretch of the imagination. So the first game, we have obviously a ton of listeners in the Chicago area, and Bears fans have, you know, been through a bit of a purgatorial experience. Same with the Lions, especially Lions fans. Wow. So the Bears and Lions are playing tomorrow at 12:30. The Lions are always on Thanksgiving. It's kind of a Thanksgiving tradition. Cowboys, too. I'll talk about them in a second. But who do you think is going to pull this one off? You know, it's the Lions haven't won a game yet. They did tie the Steelers a couple weeks ago. Head coach Dan Campbell, I think they're still playing for him. He's a fiery guy. He's a passionate guy. But and they have pride, right? Lions pride.
I think they're going to get their first win of the year.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? You're betting against the Bears. Okay.
Oh, I mean, they're only like a 3.5-4 point favorite, and I think the Lions are going to win their first game of the year, and there's rumors that might be the Bears final. Their Bears coach might get fired after the game. You never want to wish for a firing. I'm not a Bears fan either way, but
this whole thing has just been a PR disaster. So word leaked out that the Bears have, in fact, now whether or not this is true, I don't know if it's been 100% confirmed, but a lot of sources are reporting that Matt Nagy has already been fired, and maybe they gave him the option. Do you want to coach the Thanksgiving game? And he said yes. Now, whether or not he should is another question. And but apparently, a lot of the players haven't even been told what the story really is, and they're They're getting pretty restless. They're gonna play hard. I mean, everybody's watching this game. This is a huge national viewing audience. So I know they're gonna give it a great effort. Justin Fields, I don't think will play. He's got injured ribs. So it's gonna be the Red Rifle.
You're making me think about
mixing him up with Matt Bonner. He used to play for the Toronto Raptors. The Toronto.
You're getting your
system
nicknames. It almost sounds like a reference from like a Christmas story or something.
So the TTC, the Toronto Subway System, is called the Red Rocket. So all the subway trains are red, and so Matt Bonner, who was this redheaded guy who played for the Raptors for a while, kind of became a fan favorite. He was called the Red Rocket. Anyways, so it's the Red Rifle. Andy Dalton, he's going to be starting, and I'll probably watch that one. Now you're a big Raider fan, Patrick. You are the ultimate Raider fan, being from California, being from SoCal. Do you think they have a shot against the Cowboys?
No.
The Cowboys got
not really at all.
A very disappointing loss in Kansas City. So you think they're going to get blown out?
Oh, I think it'll be a blowout, and I'm not looking forward to. I'm just going to glance and hope it's respectable. But yeah, I'm not looking forward to it at all.
Okay. All right. Well, that's why they play the games, right?
Yeah, you never know. There could be upset. Your Bills have lost some of these games.
And they have. And that's the night game. So tomorrow night it's going to be the Buffalo Bills. Bills Mafia is going to invade New Orleans. They're going to play the Saints in the Superdome tomorrow at 8:20 p.m. on NBC. And I do think the Bills are going to win this one. They got absolutely wiped out by the Colts. I always thought the Colts were going to be good this year, despite the fact they struggled early. Frank Reich is a great coach, solid offensive line. I mean, incredible running game. Like, Jonathan Taylor scored 5 touchdowns against the Bills all by himself in the last game, and that was just so embarrassing. There's some weather issues. You know, I don't know. Josh Allen was not wearing a glove. I didn't see him have any problems necessarily throwing the ball, but a lot of guys would drop passes in the rain. And it was just no excuses. They lost the game. They got blown out. And I don't know what's going to happen. I honestly don't know what's going to happen this year. The AFC is wide open. I actually think there's a really, and a lot of people are talking about this, not just me, but I would not be shocked at all if somehow the Patriots made it to the Super Bowl. Because they're playing as good as anybody right now. Mac Jones, the rookie quarterback, has really come alive. They've really got this thing figured out. Bill Belichick is reloaded. They can beat anybody right now in the AFC. And I wouldn't be shocked if it was a Tampa Bay Patriots Super Bowl. Obviously, I'm pulling for the Bills. I still think they're the most complete team in the conference. But yeah, it's... Oof. I don't know, man.
Dream Super Bowl for TV purposes would probably be New England versus Tampa.
The storylines are have you watched the Man in the Arena show,
Tom? No, Brady? And what I've heard about it is, it's one of those shows where I think it would have been better if it was made 20 years later, just like The Last Dance. That's my opinion.
Interesting. Yeah, this is the same crew that brought us Tom versus Time on Facebook Watch a couple years ago. So I did watch the first episode. It was well done, but I didn't learn anything. I knew. I mean, if you didn't know much about Brady's background,
there's probably better things you could watch on Thanksgiving. That's my opinion.
Well, you know, I'm gonna watch it. I did PVR episode 2 yesterday, so I'll probably watch that later. But anyways, lots of possibilities for Thanksgiving, and I hope everybody has a great time with their friends and family.
I was going to say, you do, even though you don't have, even if it's not Canadian Thanksgiving, you're still going to be...
I'm still celebrating, absolutely. Yeah. I have lots of American friends like you and everyone listening, and so I am definitely celebrating. I'm double dipping. I am absolutely double dipping.
Maybe we should institute that here at Relevant Radio.
I think so.
Canadian holiday, Canadian Labor Day, Canadian absolutely. Or whatever. Because we have a Canadian on staff.
There you go. And... couple Canadians, really, because truthfully, Peter Atkinson is Canadian as well.
I did not know that.
I knew
he lived in like the Northeast, like in New York. I did not know. And here's the story. He never told me that. 2 minutes, by the way, Kale. I played golf with him. He never told me that.
First of all, I didn't know that he played golf. So, it's good to know that I have some more partners to play with when I come down there next time. But yeah, he's Canadian. And, of course, he is heading up the Merry Beggars at Relevant Radio. And if you go to the Relevant Radio website, you're definitely going to want to sign up for what they've got cooking for us this Advent. This is the first of its kind, the first time this has ever been done, to our knowledge. In the history of the United States of America, an Advent calendar, an Advent audio calendar, Charles Dickens, A Christmas Carol. and it's done by Peter and friends. A lot of professional actors were hired for this. It is really cool. It's a radio drama. I've never seen anything like this, but I'm really excited about the work.
You can't really say seen anything like it. Okay, 1 minute.
Yeah, that's a great point. Great point. We'll have Peter on the show very soon to talk about this, and I'm really looking forward to chatting with him about this and all the exciting things that are going on with the Merry Beggars on Relevant Radio. So go to the website, check that out, do yourself a favor. And yeah, the next time we talk in person, it's going to be Advent. Can you imagine? So time is flying, and I hope you have a great Thanksgiving. Everybody listening out there, be happy and safe. Hug your loved ones. We have so much to be thankful for, so much to be thankful for, to be able to practice our faith in freedom. It's a great gift. It's a great gift. And you're a great gift to me. It's been great.